Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe that the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And this podcast is not too political, and it's not too radical, and not too technical. Because I am not a gunsmith, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, and I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a private citizen. And I believe strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So I'm going to keep it real and talk about guns. So let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com, podcasting freedom.
All right, thanks for tuning in to episode number 82, and this is going to be pretty much a follow-up to the show I posted on Monday, episode 81. This is more close-range gunfighting from the shooting range, and this is going to be a relatively short podcast because really it's just an add-on to the last episode, but I am going to go ahead and call it episode 82 anyway because there is enough here material here to actually make this a full podcast. So I just want to preface this real quick with a couple of brief announcements and a few thoughts about this class once again that I took about a week and a half ago now. First of all, with the announcements, you're going to hear this on September the 1st, 2010, on Wednesday the 1st. What that means is 2 weeks left of the Freedom Raffle. It's going real well. The reason I extended it, as I've said a couple of times now, and I'll say it again, some people wanted to mail me the money, and I understand that, and some people wanted to wait until the 1st to mail me the money, so I want to give plenty of time for ticket purchases to come and go by mail. I'm kind of doing this the low technology way, forgive me. Anyway, it's going real well, so get your tickets, go to handgunworld.com, click the Freedom Raffle. It'll explain everything. Win a Ruger LCP, concealed carry pocket pistol, or I'm giving away two $100 gift certificates. The great folks at CompTac decided to sponsor this raffle. I'm very thankful. And then also a $100 gift certificate. Get yourself a new knife at knivesandgear.com. There's going to be four winners, and I'll be videotaping the drawing and putting it on YouTube so you can see how it all went down. You're going to support my show, the Gun Rights Radio Network, and it looks like, pretty much, unless something really radical happens here, the Second Amendment Foundation is also going to get a third of the money. And that's good to see. They have the next 10 or 12 lawsuits already scripted out, ready to go. I heard that on Tom Gresham's Gun Talk podcast, and I just think that that is cool. If you Google Second Amendment Foundation, you will see that they are, I think, right now, they're the organization doing the absolute most for our gun rights. That's just my personal opinion, but facts are facts. So check it out, Second Amendment Foundation. Google that, and it looks like they're probably going to be the beneficiary. However, if you buy a ticket, please, 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 I'm begging you, go to the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. If you're not a member, join. And there is a thread in my section called the Handgun World Show that says, where should I send the money? Please vote. Please vote. Make your voice heard, folks. I want to hear from you. Where should I send the money? All right, there's a poll there. Handgun World Show on Gun Rights Radio Network Forum. Check the links below the show posting. I'm linking to everything. So I'll link to the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum. I'll even link to the thread, where should I send the money? Also, if you haven't listened to episode 81, that's a prerequisite to this one. If you're a new shooter, well, maybe you are a new shooter. If you're a new listener to my show, I just want to tell you, this is a practical show. I'm just a regular guy. I'm not a gunsmith, ex-law enforcement, ex-military, anything like that, as I mentioned in the opening here. So it's a practical perspective from just an everyday guy, a salesman. I'm one of the most hated professions in the world, folks. I tell you what, I'm a sales guy. and so I travel around, and while I'm in my vehicle, as I am today, I like to bring you podcasts and talk to you about one of my great passions, which is the owning, carrying, and shooting of firearms. So episode 81 is a prerequisite to this. If you're just tuning in, go back and download that one real quick and listen to that one. And so without any more fanfare or commercialism, I really don't like making my show commercial. I don't have paid sponsors on this show, and I just want you to tune in for content. This is a listener-supported show 100%. So you've tuned in for content. That's what you're going to get. So I'm going to go ahead and give you the rest of the summary that one of my fellow training partners at Close Range Gunfighting by the name of Paul. Now, he lives here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He's the guy that was using his Les Bear 1911 in that class, which I got to say, it ran very well. It ran perfectly. So, you know, for some of you who think that I hammer on 1911s too much, I don't. I don't. You know, I'll really compliment this Les Bear because it's a great gunfighting tool for that course. It ran well. So Paul gives you his 1911 perspective. I, of course, give you my Glock perspective, and we talk about what we did at close range gunfighting. When all this is over, by the way, I'm gonna play all the little segments back to back. When all this is over, I've got some really cool listener feedback for you. You don't want to miss this. A guy from Puerto Rico sent me a really interesting email. You don't want to miss the listener feedback at the end of this show, okay? So here you go. 15 seconds of music, a quick commercial for the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum, and then Paul and I talk about day two at close range gunfighting. I'll catch you after the interview. Here you go.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the Forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
All right, Paul. Mm. We're here day two, the first half of the day here. What did we learn first half of the day at close range gunfighting?
Well, first thing you noticed was that everyone showed up in shorts, pretty much, except our two holdouts from yesterday.
No. We got one guy here still with his blue jeans on.
But, and his argument, which I think is very key, and he makes, is that this is what he carries in. So it's very realistic for his training.
He's dressing like he's working.
Exactly, you know. And so he's not coming out here with half this tactical stuff that, you know, hangs all over the place. And
you mean he doesn't look like a mall ninja?
There you go. But he's training in his everyday wear, which is very, very practical. I think the second thing we learned is make sure you got a good local source for ammo.
Yes, we raided Walmart for ammo last night.
Yeah, three of us showed up at once, and a couple of us showed up later on. We started off the morning talking about low light stuff, which is a little bit difficult to do when you're in broad daylight. It doesn't necessarily drive those points home. But one of the things we talked about was the various ways you can index a flashlight and how you want to carry that.
Right.
Gabe Suarez, Glenn was saying, likes to carry in the neck or the jaw index. And
the flashlight with jaw index, yeah.
The positive point in the jaw index, whichever way you turn your head, that light's going to go that direction.
Which is good.
The downside to that is if you are walking around with your light all showing all over the place and someone decides to take a shot at the light, they've got a darn good chance of hitting you, so
right.
You want to be aware of that. The other thing to be concerned of is when you're fighting with a flashlight, you're not fighting with the flashlight. The flashlight's a tool. It allows you to identify your target. Once you know you're not shooting at your mother-in-law, or that you know that you are.
What if I want to shoot at my mother-in-law?
Okay, then there's that option there. But once you make sure it is a target that needs to be dealt with in a severe manner, you go ahead, you turn that light off, and you start moving away from where you originally shine that
away
light
from your previous
away
known
from
position.
Previous known position. A couple different methods you can do is you can go ahead, you can have the light held away from you off to the side. And one of the points they made was if you're going to do that, holding it way off to the side, when you start moving, move the opposite direction of where you just shine the light from.
Good point.
So if you got your light held out to the left, don't go running to the left because they happen to take a shot in the dark, as it were, at your last known position or the last light's position, you might run into a bullet.
Hit you.
The various methods you can talk about in trying to do two hands is the Harry's method, which is kind of hard to describe in words, but basically, instead of having both hands up on the gun, you've got one hand turned and holding the flashlight underneath the gun, bracing the wrist.
Right.
And David made a good point of, if you lock your wrists together, after a while that starts to get very monotonous. When I say a while, we're talking about maybe two magazines, it becomes a problem. Whereas if you go ahead and put the wrist a little bit closer to the forearms, that tends to get a little bit of a better light there.
Exactly.
One of the points I brought up, which, you know, was, you know, because I'm firing a 1911 with 8 rounds, is the fact that if you're changing mags,
reloading.
Yeah, reloading is an issue. And you got to stop and think about what you want to do with that flashlight. You brought up the point of, you can tuck the flashlight under your elbow or under your armpit. I'm not a big fan of that, simply because of, if I move, I've got to be aware of trying to trap it in there, and that may kind of hinder my motion a little bit. You know, but that's kind of knowing your different body mechanics. You can drop the flashlight in the pocket. But, you know, suppose you're coming out of the, you know, you're coming out of your bedroom and you're, you know, in your boxers, you drop your flashlight in your pocket and you realize that you don't have a pocket there.
Yeah, and the one thing you want to make sure is you don't want to just drop your flashlight on the ground.
Exactly.
That's bad.
I suggest a neckline here.
Yeah, and so one of our instructors and fellow shooters is talks about putting your flashlight, wearing it on a neck lanyard.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're facing a threat, don't be afraid. Once you know you have a threat, if you can see a shadow or whatever, you don't need a light. Just go off your muzzle flash.
That's right. That's right. Most of the time, you can see the threat from the muzzle flash, or
the flashlight
makes you a target.
Yep. Another thing, Clint Smith at Thunder Ranch does this. They actually offer, they sell the flashlight in which you've got the little flashlight with a lanyard for your finger on it. So if need be, you can go ahead and spin that thing around to the back of your hand, do whatever manipulations with your gun you need to. Shooting a 1911, I had a lot more practice doing that sort of stuff. But one of the other reasons I like it is if there's a case of the weapon fouling or jamming, or you need to do some sort of manipulation,
malfunction drill,
you know what? You don't want to be thinking, okay, I'm going to hold this here and hold that there while I try and do all this. You know, I can just spin that light around to the back of my hand. It's still going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
From there, we moved on kind of a review of yesterday doing shooting on the move, 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock to the center of mass, one to the head, with the evaluation afterwards, making sure that we...
Assessment, 360 assessment.
Yeah, making sure we got the good soul position, making sure that we're checking ourselves and going ahead and doing a proactive reload.
Yeah, we practiced more on that, which was good.
Absolutely. Then we went into it with a one-handed deal. One of the points that was made to me by one of our fellow shooters was that on the point shooting thing, they talk about if you're shooting on the move with one hand, and everyone talks about, oh, you need to use your sights, you need to use your sights. Well, that's not always a viable option. Figure out what eye you're dominant. Get the gun under that dominant eye, and not just the dominant eye, but the dominant part of your eye. He ran a little test on me and discovered that, you know, I know I'm right eye dominant, but he figured out that the dead center of my right eye is where I'm dominant. So I'm pretty darn lucky. I actually don't have to move the gun around. I just bring it up to the center of my eye, and I'm good to go from
there. Let me make a quick comment, because Glenn was right. Glenn told us at first that some of us were going to report that we didn't see our sights. I didn't see my sights, Glenn. I didn't see them. We were moving and shooting, using one hand. I wasn't using sights. And I was putting them on target.
Mm-hmm.
When you move, if you have that visual index, you know, when you're standing still, you can use a body index. But if you're moving, you got that visual index down.
Yep. You know what I was using? On the Glock slide, because the top of the slide is flat, I was just using the two corners of the front of the slide as an index for where my sight was probably supposed to be. Metal on meat shooting. I like that.
Then we finished up talking about, thinking from the bad guy's perspective, what's going to be hardest for us. We're shooting on the move, and we talked about it's difficult to track on an outer perimeter, swinging around.
Yes.
So we talked about going to the back side of their gun hand. It's not an unknown concept. We use it a lot in martial arts about shooting to the outside. If you get inside on this guy, he's got all his weapons available to you. If you shoot to the outside of him, he can only theoretically bring back
the outside of his shooting hand.
Outside of the shooting hand, outside of whatever hand it is. But we always talk about going to an angle on him, and next thing you know, I've got a plethora of targets to choose from and no weapons to worry about. Well, you take that farther into a firearm or a weapon situation, think a little bit more about, okay, well, how is it going to impact this weapon? If I shoot to the outside of his weapon hand... Move to the outside of his weapon hand. Sorry, when I say shoot, I'm talking about going. When you move to the outside of his weapon hand, it's harder for them to track that thing around and bring it to bear on you. So making sure when you're shooting, when you're doing, and if you ever come back to a force-on-force, that's a good little trick to have before everyone else figures it out. Yep. As they come running at you, run to the outside of that shooting hand.
It's going to be harder for him to hit you with the airsoft.
Absolutely. Anything else?
All right. Did we forget anything?
Just know your environment. I mean, you can't always go to right. the weapon, you know, offside. Or
right. React to what the situation is.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Hey, you want me to help you break
down? Okay, Paul. So we're going to recap the second half of the last day here.
That's right. We in the afternoon, we went ahead and we worked on barricade shooting behind from behind cover. That was this afternoon, right?
Yeah, that was this afternoon. We did barricade shooting here at close-range gunfighting.
That's right.
And it was basically behind hard cover.
Yes, it was. We set up multiple targets, six targets, and we had to advance to two different barricades and be able to take them out with a controlled double to the body and then a shot to the head.
Yeah, right.
A couple good points that were made is don't crowd your cover. You know, it's
That's
a real
right.
tendency to want to get right behind that wall while ricochet can get you. And I remember reading about this in Black Hawk Down. One of the Delta guys got killed by a ricochet AK-47 shot.
Because he was crowding cover.
He wasn't crowding cover, believe it or not. It was a 7.62 that ricocheted off a wall, hit him smack
oh,
in the
Oh, is that
forehead.
Right?
That's right. If you've ever seen the movie, they tell you the guys, hey, don't stand next to the wall. And then all of a sudden that wall blows up right in his face, and said, that's why.
So that's why we learned today, don't
exactly.
crowd cover.
Don't
a lot of people
cover.
Have a temptation. They get too close to it.
Exactly.
And they feel like it's going to make it easier to shoot, but it's not.
Absolutely. So we went ahead. Went there, we talked about being able to switch from one hand to the other. One of the things you'll see sometimes done, I've seen it done some IDPA shoots, is which you'll get the guy, if you're a right-handed shooter and you've got to shoot out to the left, instead of transitioning to your left hand, you're leaning your body
way out over cover too
exactly,
much.
Exactly, and you're exposing yourself. So not in a good way either.
That's right.
So one of the things that we worked on was transitioning to your weak hand. This is a problem I had, that I playing hot potato with my gun. And, you know, once you've already established a good shooting grip on your gun, there's no reason to let that go. So JB, one of the instructors on the course who was shooting today, gave me a real good tip of, you know, instead of tossing the gun hand back and forth, go ahead and wrap your thumbs around to the other side of the gun.
Yeah. When you're transitioning from strong hand to weak hand.
Strong hand to weak hand, and you're never really losing your grip on it. So you're set to go from there. And that really, really helped me with doing that sort of thing. Then from there, we did that a few times, and then we went to a 360-degree threat assessment.
Now, that was an excellent learning experience there, 360-degree assessment.
Without a doubt. You've got 360 degrees there, and you had three targets in front of you and two behind. We had to go shooting on the move as well, you know, not standing still, not being static. And
and that was simulating you take care of the bad guys in front of you, and then all of a sudden his friends come up from behind.
All of a sudden, and, you know, a few of us, not naming names, we got a little bit quick on the transition and ran it like we knew someone was behind.
That was me. You can name names.
That's okay.
I messed that one up the first time.
You know, but it was real interesting. And then David, another one of the instructors from Oklahoma, after watching all of us guys go through it, he popped out a new trick for us all to emulate, in which instead of just running side to side, he ran in an aggressive manner to
yes,
the targets.
That was good.
And engaged them that way. And that's something most people don't normally think about because, oh, this is a weapon, it's bad, I want to get away. But you know what? You can sometimes overpower force with force. You stop and think
True.
About it. Most people who are attacking you on the street, in a lot of cases, especially in today's times, they're looking for a target. They're not looking for someone who's going to fight back. And all of a sudden being overwhelmed by that force brought back to them can be a little bit startling.
Mm-hmm. So basically the advancement towards the targets is overwhelming.
Exactly. It all of a sudden brings the fight right back to them. When I was going through on mine a couple of times, the first time through, I forgot the magic rule of always keep moving while you're reloading.
I did that too.
Yep. And so we ran through that a few times and picked up some pretty good stuff, although no one did a tactical roll, which I was a little bit disappointed.
No Hollywood rolls out there, huh?
Hollywood roll. Our other David, who came in and was shooting today, had really, really good movement. And the other David made a good point. That's good movement for us to pick up from. I thought it was kind of interesting because as you're watching, I mean, he got a couple times which he got his reload stuck in his shirt. And rather than panic and freak out, he just kept moving. And I made the comment, it was actually kind of funny, because it's like watching an old Bugs Bunny cartoon when you see the cartoon characters running zigzag. And, you know, as silly as it may seem, that's what you want to be doing.
Well, sure. And why do you want to move when you're reloading?
Because you don't want to make yourself a stationary target, because you're not putting bullets back at this person.
Correct.
You want to make sure that, you know, that he's got something at least to think about, or, you know, not make it too easy for him to go ahead and track.
And if anybody thinks that moving and reloading is easy, I think, again, it's not.
Absolutely. And it was funny because, you know, I felt in some cases like I was at a Glock commercial. But
I know.
But Glenn made the point. He said, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen someone go through this class, that, or go through one of these classes, the 1911, that didn't go down.
Congratulations.
Thank you very
much. It didn't go down. Your 1911 was flawless.
But I'll tell you what a lot of it came down to, though, was proper maintenance of the weapon.
Yes.
And, you know, not that the Glocks went down, but there were some problems with, not, well, let me rephrase that. There weren't problems with the Glocks themselves, but it was stuff like stovepipes, mm-hmm. or double feeds. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing that's necessarily gun caused. And there was a couple of cases, I think you in one case dropped the mag.
I dropped the mag.
When
yes.
you were advancing up. When
right.
Dave got up there, he didn't have the mag seated and didn't have a round chamber.
And also didn't have a round chamber.
And yeah. And you know, we had to deal with that. Now when Mike got up there, he didn't have a problem with his gun, but he did have a mistake when he realized he turned too quickly without doing a proper assessment. He just kind of stopped and looked over at the rest of us, and we're mm-hmm. all yelling, "Go on, go on."
And one of the mistakes I made is I shot one of those without doing any assessment. Mm-hmm. I didn't do any 360 assessment to see if there's any threats.
Now,
let me ask you a question, Paul, about your 1911.
Yep.
Have you modified it at all?
I changed the sights on it, but that's it.
That's
I didn't even change the sights. No, honestly, I changed the rear sight.
The rear sight.
Simply
that's
because,
it.
You know, that's
but
what
you
I
haven't
want.
Messed with the internals at all.
No, I don't
that's
need
one
to.
Of the reasons why it ran well.
You know, there's possibly that, but I'll tell you the other thing a lot of it was that I took it home last night and I oiled it.
Good.
You know, and that's the thing. You know, we made this point that, you know, if you can treat your gun like a lawnmower,
yep.
get a Glock. But I think more importantly than that was the mentality that everyone showed today, even when there was malfunctions.
Yep.
You know, JD had a double feed on his. He went ahead. He didn't
he
stop.
He did get a double feed?
Yeah. He didn't stop. He didn't flip out. He ran the gun. He went ahead. He did his malfunction drill.
Yep.
And went from
you did
there.
The tap, rack, and bang, didn't you?
That's right.
I think that didn't work, so I ripped out the mag and put a new mag in.
And they both made good. Points that, you know, you really only need two malfunction drills, which is tap, yep. rack, and bang, or grip, rip, and start again.
Good training with you, David.
I'm looking for the YouTube, gentlemen.
All right.
There you go.
It'll be, we'll get you the YouTube. Paul, thanks.
Thank you
good
very
training
much.
With
yeah,
you.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
hey,
it.
Hey, go ahead.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. Get to a class similar to this. That's all I want to say. I don't work for Suarez International. I got to tell you, that was just such a great course. I've been doing a lot of dry firing practice lately, practicing a lot of what I learned. All the techniques. I'm glad I got a chance to interview Paul, because I'm just going to keep playing this back to myself over and over and over again, and then just keep doing some dry fire practicing. Yeah, right now I can only afford to take one of these types of classes every year. So as I mentioned, I'm going to mix classes like this with IDPA and USPSA shooting and try to keep myself sharp. Hope you enjoyed that. All right, a little bit of listener feedback, but before I get into that, do me a favor. If you use iTunes to download my show, would you please go over to iTunes and write a review? I would like it. You guys have made this a 5-star show. Great reviews. Thank you very much. If you've got some good constructive criticism, I don't mind that either. That would be fantastic. Or if you don't use iTunes, go to handgunworld.com, and there's a space for comments below each podcast posting. I'd like to hear what you have to say. I'm an open-minded guy, folks. I don't mind criticism one way or the other. If you want to give me an attaboy, that's great. But if you've got some constructive stuff to say, I am all ears and open-minded. Please send it my way. All right. Some cool listener feedback here. This is great. This is what makes this show worthwhile. When I get stuff like this, this just pumps me up. This is why I do this show. Mr. Dominguez from Puerto Rico, one of my listeners from Puerto Rico, and by the way, to all of you international listeners, even though Puerto Rico is technically not international, for all of you who listen to me outside of the United States, thank you, thank you, thank you. I feel that it is an honor to be stretching out across our United States borders and to talk to you about firearms. But Mr. Dominguez sends me a really cool email. Here you go. I'm going to paraphrase it because it's long, but he says, thank you for the show. He says he's a 37-year-old CPA living in Puerto Rico. 6 months ago, a good friend got me interested in gun ownership, and I decided to research the topic, and as much as possible, I wanted to research it before making a decision. He searched out every podcast, including mine, and every YouTube channel that there is, and he said he came to a conclusion that not only should he have a gun, but every law-abiding citizen should. And he goes on to write, it was as if someone had lifted the wool from my eyes, and it seems so obvious now. I researched guns for home defense and even went to Florida on vacation and rented a couple of guns and found that the Glock 19 was right for me. It seems like, and this is kind of cool. I love his comment here about the Glock 19. He says, it's kind of like a German Shepherd. It's not the best at anything, but it's very good at everything. So I think that's good. It's not the best at anything, but it's pretty good at everything. Maybe I might have had a little bit of influence on him buying that Glock 19. I don't know, but oh well. I'll let you decide. He goes on to say, as I mentioned, I live in Puerto Rico, which is a U.S. territory, and all people born in Puerto Rico are U.S. citizens at birth. Now, you got to hear this, folks. If you think the gun laws are bad in the United States, I don't care where you live, I don't care which of the 50 states you live in, listen to what this guy has to go through in Puerto Rico. He says, all persons born in Puerto Rico are U.S. citizens at birth. However, the gun laws here are some of the most ridiculous of any part of the country. I had to request permission from the state just to own a gun. After 4 months of extensive background checks from the Puerto Rico Police Department, I was allowed to own a gun. Did you hear that? After 4 months worth of background checks. He goes on to write, my license came with a letter, which was more of a scolding, stating that the severe penalties I would pay if I was a person to abuse this privilege of owning a gun. Some laws I can live with, such as only being able to buy one gun a month, but others are a joke. For example, and again, this is gun laws in Puerto Rico. You ready for this? Number one, you have to request a special license to be able to practice at a range with your gun. So if you don't have a target practice license, you're only allowed to go to the shooting range once a year and you can only shoot 50 rounds. Can you believe that? You have to get a target practice license just to go to the frickin' range to practice with your gun. Whew. Gosh, I hope Chicago Mayor Richard Daley is not listening to this right now. Oh, that's right. Yeah. He banned shooting ranges in Chicago, or he's trying to. Whatever. All right, listen to this. Number two. In Puerto Rico, gun laws in Puerto Rico. Every gun you purchase is registered by the gun store to your license number and into the Puerto Rican police database. Every bullet you purchase is also registered. If you buy too many bullets, you might get a visit from the police wondering, what are you doing with all of them? I'm not making this up, folks. This is from Mr. Dominguez in Puerto Rico. Number three, you can only buy bullets that match your registered guns. And if you try to buy a different type of bullet, the store owner is required to notify the police. Number four, in order to request a concealed carry license, you must appear before a judge with three witnesses that must swear under oath that they have known you for the past 5 years and that they are sure that you are a law-abiding citizen. And if you ever get into trouble, you might get your friends in trouble also. Whew, man. I can't believe this even just as I'm reading this. He also says you have to provide a reason as to why you feel that your life might be in danger and why you need to carry a gun to defend yourself. Finally, you have to submit yourself to even more extensive background checks, which include the police visiting and interviewing your friends, neighbors, and co-workers. If someone does not like you, then you're not getting a gun. Puerto Rico does not recognize any license from any other states. So he goes on to write, this is good stuff, folks. So as you can see, although the American flag flies, on all of our state and federal buildings, the Second Amendment's reach has until now been limited to just the United States mainland. However, the recent victory in Illinois has made clear that the Second Amendment covers all U.S. citizens, including those living in U.S. territories. So, Bob, I have jumped through all the hoops, and by the time you read this, I will be the proud owner of a Glock 19, fourth generation, and probably an NRA member, too. So, on behalf of the many U.S. citizens living outside the 50 states, but still in the within the U.S. borders, thank you, Bob, and everyone who keeps up the fight for the Second Amendment rights. I love both of your shows. And Mr. Dominguez also writes, P.S., although we have some of the strictest gun laws in the United States, the murder rate is soaring with almost 700 murders so far this year, which for a small island like Puerto Rico is a lot. Well, Mr. Dominguez, first of all, congratulations on your purchase. Congratulations on going through the hoops. My goodness, congratulations on sticking with it. Sounds like you beat him down, and you got your gun, and you can defend yourself, and I can't believe it. You know, as I read that email, I just kind of, something came over me, and I thought how very fortunate we are here in the United States. You know, especially if you live in the U.S. and you are in a gun-friendly state. Just think about what Mr. Dominguez has to go through in Puerto Rico. You guys remember several months ago, I also shared the email with you from a listener in Australia. Seems like in Australia, you have to go through almost the same to get a gun as well. Thank God for the U.S. of A. That's all I can say. For the mainland U.S. of A and for the great gun-friendly states. We have a lot of work to do for gun rights, folks. That's why I keep pushing this freedom raffle. We've got to put our money where our mouth is. We've got to put our actions where our mouth is. We've got to fight, fight, fight. So once again, I'll just close by saying, Mr. Dominguez, thank you very much. And if I ever get to Puerto Rico, which I kind of like to go to Puerto Rico. Never been there. I'm going to email you, look you up, and buy you a beer or something. That is, if you partake. If not, we'll figure something out. So with that said, as I mentioned, this is kind of a short show, but really was just an add-on to episode 81, but technically it's episode 82. So I just want to say, folks, thank you very, very much for tuning in. I have a really cool interview coming up next week with a deputy sheriff. You got to listen to it. It's really going to be some interesting stuff about what happens if you are in a situation where you have to defend yourself, what to do next, and it's going to be from a law enforcement perspective. So guess what, folks? Yes, I'm going to have a cop on this show next week. I'll be interviewing a law enforcement officer, a deputy sheriff in Minnesota. Stay tuned. That's going to get posted on Wednesday. As I've said many times, I'm trying to post these on Wednesdays with a few exceptions, like when I do classes and I want to review them and get the information out to you quickly. I'm Bob Main. You've just listened to another episode of the Handgun World Show. And why do I carry a gun? Because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next week. Guns and money. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.